on.
So my morning was spent, not my morning, my mid-morning was spent staring at my laptop, more nervous than I am in any sporting event that I follow.
Why is that?
Mars rover landing.
I was wondering.
I watched it live. It was fantastic. And to watch the whole command, mission control, like erupt in applause. Because these people, I mean, the people forget, like this isn't something they've been following since it launched. This is something they've been working on for a decade. Mm-hmm. Like this, that's how long these missions from inception to landing take. And there's so much at stake, and watching the relief on people and how happy they are. And this is just phase one. It's just landed, right? Yeah. I mean, we've got all kinds of other stuff spilling out, but it made me feel like watching like the fourth quarter in a Super Bowl where the Seahawks are involved or something. Like, you're just nervous.
You can't even concentrate.
Like, people are talking to you like, quiet. You know, you don't want anyone to bother you. Anyway, but that is beside the point of what we're going to be talking about. But first, before we talk about that, I went into the other day. I needed to pick up some gear to do some work at the house. I walk into this place and the equipment is all dented. It's scratched. It's, some of it isn't working.
What?
It's... all of it is like, it looked like a junk pile. I walk outside, I look at the sign, and it said Mard Rental. And I realized, of course,
that's your problem.
I walked into the wrong place.
Yep.
Where should I have gone?
I think what you meant to do in the first place was go to Star Rentals.
I'm guessing.
So Star Rentals, as all of you Starbies know, is the preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
What is the single most important thing that Star Rentals does?
It sponsors this show right here, Seattle Sports at Night.
Seattle Sports at Night. All right, Stacey. So let's talk a little bit about, well, you wanted to talk about the your San Diego Padres,
which you have grown up rooting
for the same way I grew up rooting for the Tampa Bay Rays.
As someone from SeaTac, Washington, I grew up on the San Diego Padres.
Who didn't?
I mean, San Diego Padres, a huge local fandom. Right. No, the San Diego Padres are, they've been making headlines for the last couple years with some big signings. The most recent was signing young star Fernando Tatis Jr. to a 14-year mega deal. I think it's something like $340 million.
How old is he at the end of that deal? Do you know?
He will be in his, like, 35 or 36.
Well, that's actually plausible.
It's still, I mean, you would still be, like, a viable free agent.
Yes, potentially
veteran.
Still a good, productive player at
right.
that age.
So,
it wasn't like the Pujols
when he
contract.
Signed his,
yeah, because his was like, he was like 44 when it was over or something like that.
They're like, yeah, your Pujols deal is infinity at $24 million per year. So the deal itself has sparked all kinds of cool conversations. And there are some, one in particular that I think is maybe more intriguing for all the Mariners fans who are listening. And that is the way that this comparatively small market, San Diego Padres, the way that they've been able to build. I think for a long time, people have always felt that in a small market, your best way to win is to take like the Oakland A's Moneyball approach, try to find the best guys that other people have given up on the cheap or game the system or what have you. And that is one way that a team, the A's, truly did build a great team. Like, it is a real thing that happened. Another thing people think is you have your homegrown talent and then they leave you in free agency. So try to win while you have these guys. And those approaches have kind of worked for teams in the past.
Right.
But it is also not a coincidence that those big market teams, the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox, have continued to go on and win title after title. More so obviously for the Yankees because they spend a lot of money and are willing to either take on a luxury tax or be a destination spot because they win so often. And so what the Padres have done that's garnering a lot of attention is take a similar approach. Basically, we're going to spend, we're going to drop big bucks on people that we want here, And they have pushed themselves right up into the top of the MLB power rankings heading into the 2021 season. It is them and it is the Dodgers.
But at this point, it's sort of the pseudo power rankings because we don't know.
Nothing is officially started.
Yeah, they've signed new people. So we will see how it all works out. And no one's been injured yet or none of that stuff has happened. But their talent load is impressive.
It is impressive. And it is all the more impressive given that they are a small market. And there's been just this longstanding narrative in which there is some truth that it is harder for these markets to spend money. But another part of that reality, and this has also been written about, is that these markets can do it. It's just they often haven't, whether it's because they're focused on trying to make a profit or because they just are competing with what they feel are bigger teams. I mean, for instance, the Seattle Mariners could spend a lot more money than they're spending right now. They are choosing not to because they're probably waiting to see who they have with some of these young prospects that are developing. Right. They have their eye toward 2022 and 2023. If they like what they see, the understanding locally is they're going to go out and spend money. So that's why they aren't doing it right now. But they are able to. So if they had all the talent in the world and you were like, drop money on an ace pitcher or trade for this shortstop or whatever it is, they have the ability to do that, even though they're a smaller market.
Yeah. Although here's the funny thing, just to back up a little bit.
Yeah.
So there is about 1.4 million people in San Diego. Mm-hmm. There's about a little over 4 million in San Diego County. And San Diego is a fair distance from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that they see them as separate media markets.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that San Diego is really classified as a small. I mean, it seems like a mid, maybe. Certainly not large. I know there's like, you don't rank L.A., New York, Chicago, obviously huge markets. And then maybe you even consider something like St. Louis, big city, but it's also the only thing around there. So maybe that's another one. But it would seem odd. I mean, San Diego is not tiny. I mean, it's another 500,000 people larger than Seattle, and I don't feel like Seattle's tiny. And that's just the city itself. It seems that this does not to me seem beyond the team's reach to do something like this. Quite a few years ago, there was a really interesting, we got this window, we meaning the public, got this window into baseball finance when it was a lawsuit against the Kansas City Royals. Kansas City Royals were going through a period at that time they hadn't won anything in more than a decade. They were terrible for a long time. But you got this window, it was a lawsuit, they got this window into their finances, and it showed that they were raking in money, even though they were losing, even though it was 8,000 people showing up at games. It turns out baseball economics is pretty weird, and that they play so many games. They have good national revenue sharing, other forms of that. Like, they, even bad teams make money. And I think sometimes that's why you don't see these teams improve over time, because
there's no incentive.
And I would point the arrow right at us here in Seattle for that primary reason. Like, every now and then they do, because they feel like they're losing faith with their fan base. And then they just kind of go back to what they're doing. I mean, yeah, I hope we have a lot of talent out there, but when you see other teams like that, and weirdly enough, we're probably going to get a chance to see San Diego. Isn't that sort of the artificial interleague rival of the Mariners? Isn't that who we end up playing a lot, is San Diego? I thought that they were trying to gin up these interleague right by regularly scheduling. And I think we play the Padres almost every year, do we not?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I think, too, COVID's going to impact this. Last year, they redid the schedule to keep it geographical, in which case you would be playing a lot more NL West teams than you normally would.
Right.
I don't really know if that's what they're doing this year. The schedule is, I think, set. So they would have to redo it in order for that to be the case. But I think so.
It would be, now, this isn't going to happen this year, but it would be nice to get to the, well, there's actually, that this wouldn't actually be the case. I know the Mariners are one of the few teams that's never even been in the World Series. Mm-hmm. The Padres have never won a World Series. They were swept by the Yankees once.
Stupid Yankees. Everyone has had their dreams crushed by the Yankees.
Yeah. It's a drag. So I'm not rooting for them because I'm a Giants fan, and so I'm definitely rooting against the Padres. The Padres did manage to produce two of baseball's ugliest uniforms in history. Chicago White Sox probably with, have you ever seen the pictures of their shorts?
I was just thinking, I don't mind their uniforms. What are you talking about?
No. Look at the old one. Look at Chicago White Sox and look at Chicago White Sox shorts. They did a uniform that was like shorts.
Chicago White Sox
yes.
shorts.
Look this up.
No, Mike.
Did you see him?
No.
Yes, he did.
When
that.
Was this?
70s?
No, yes. This is awful. Why? It's not even like it gets hot in Chicago.
Well, it does. It gets humid.
What is the plan? What is the thought process?
Imagine sliding in those.
Why? Why did this happen?
I don't know.
Oh, this is awful.
Yeah. So that will always win worst ever baseball uniform.
It's not even close.
Not even close. But the Padres also managed to produce some colors
fair.
That really looked like a plate of, I don't know, of like chili and melted
the
stuff
Padres,
from a cheese pump.
You know
it was just terrible.
The Padres uniform is a very kind of mid-century. It's brown. You got some yellow or whatever in there,
yeah.
like a little bit of, but the thing is that mid-century is very much back. And so that's important to note there, Mike.
All right. Well, I'm rooting for, but I do like to see, I like any team that decides to spend. I think Tatis, is mm-hmm, that pronunciation? Mm-hmm. He's a remarkable
he's
player.
Really good.
He's one of the best in baseball. I think it's great that you can keep a player like that. The Mariners, when faced with those opportunities, I mean, I think generally did. I mean, they certainly kept Ken Griffey around for a long time. I mean, he really was. By the time he went to Cincinnati, he had sort of, you know, he was definitely on the tail end of his career at that particular point. But it is a little frustrating when these teams that are in markets, even just slightly larger than Seattle's, seem to be willing to spend.
Yeah, and
we're, I mean, and again, we are rebuilding. It's a little like the Winchester Mystery House. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
That's in San Jose, California. It was the heir to the Winchester rifle fortune. This is back in this house was being built, I think, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Sarah Winchester was told by a fortune teller that as long as she continued to build on the house, that she would achieve some form of immortality. And
what?
I know that there was something also, yeah, there was also something related to her trying to wipe away the spirits of
I
all the people
in a fortune
killed
as a fortune
by,
teller
exactly.
in like the early 1900s.
The people killed by Winchester rifles or something along those lines.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
So you go to the Winchester Mystery House and they kept doing construction on it for decades. I mean, she under her orders. And so there's staircases leading into walls. It's crazy. It's actually kind of a fascinating tour. But the point is that it was forever rebuilding. This is the Seattle Mariners.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle Mariners,
mm-hmm.
and they're not achieving any form of immortality. They're just putting stairways into walls all the time. And it's at some point, it gets enormously frustrating because I got to say, if there's a group of fans here in Seattle, I mean, I have a season ticket holder for the Sounders and I have a portion of one for the new Kraken. I don't know yet what to know about soccer or hockey fans. I've never been to an NHL game, but I've always liked Mariner fans a lot because they're just so long suffering.
Yeah.
And now as long suffering as any fans
and any major league.
Yeah, I mean
league.
Maybe I mean even at least even the Cleveland Indians have had years of some success and have actually gotten there. One of the greatest World Series ever was the Indians and the Cubs World Series. Mariners fans, man, I root hard for them just to get some satisfaction, even just getting to a World Series
and
I don't know. You see these other
playoffs,
teams doing this stuff
and it
brings back, like, I don't want to start the season frustrated, but I think I'm going to.
Well, that's kind of why I like this Fernando Tatis Jr. story, because part of me gets defensive. There was a tweet that I saw from a producer on the East Coast for a show that I really like. And he said something that, like, basically burying a superstar, a young superstar in a tiny market on the West Coast is bad for baseball, which it is not.
That's
for
silly.
Many reasons. It's a silly take. I understand why someone might think that because so many baseball fans are constantly focused on the health of baseball and how do you keep it going. Keeping only certain teams alive because they're bigger markets is not what keeps baseball healthy, particularly since it is much more a regional sport than anything else, than football, than anything. And so, you know, a roster full of stars in Boston does nothing for fans in California. And so, in my opinion.
Right. No, I agree.
And So part of me gets really defensive about that part of it. And then another part of me gets angry that the Mariners don't do more. And I think that there's this misguided notion that because Mariner fans are so long-suffering, because they have sat through almost two decades of not even making the postseason, much less getting far into the postseason, that they are patient enough to wait. And part of me thinks that, there's a little bit of like a Pacific Northwest culture involved with that, that like people don't call for people's heads as much here, which is true. Like, in my opinion, it's true.
Right.
But I think it's also, it's a little insulting too, to think that, well, Mariners fans, you've waited long enough, just keep waiting a little more. And it's like, no, it doesn't mean that every year Mariners fans don't go into the season still excited and still giving money and time and passion, and that players don't cycle through valuable years of their career trying to do that.
Hey, before we have to get out of here, I'm curious about these. So do we know when the season opener is for the Mariners? I assume we do.
April something.
April, yeah, it's usually early. But I mean, are they going
early spring?
And did they announce when fans are going to be allowed back in, or have they talked about that?
They've talked about, so I think fans will be in both the Grapefruit and Cactus League for spring training for limited capacity. I think the Mariners are like around 20% or less. I'm not really sure what the exact rules are.
Oh, so here in Seattle, they might?
I'm not sure what the rule is going to be for here in Seattle, okay. But for spring training on for both leagues, they are permitting fans. So I'm wondering if that will transition
sort of set the table for
exactly. Like, do you allow fans at spring training, but then suddenly not do it for the regular season? That seems kind of weird. So I am guessing that since fans are being allowed at spring training, they are very seriously considering having some form of fans in the stands for games, most especially since there are some NFL stadiums that did that late in the season.
Did you hear taking us away from the Padres?
Are we talking about murder?
Across the country to the Mets. Did you see that they had to fire yet another person?
No. What do you mean? What's happening? The Mets.
Mets.
Oh,
what happened with the Mets?
Hot mess of a situation. The only New York team I love.
Yeah, I know. The Mets.
Can you call them a New York? Yeah, what happened with them?
I just saw the headline and a little bit of the story, but it's another person working for them who was sending inappropriate messages to reporters.
Why?
Saying that he wanted to pin someone up against the wall.
Stop. And why do you think this is going to work?
I don't know.
God. Why? I'm going to do a PSA. Just for PSA for creeps.
Just for the
and
Mets.
And I'm going to be like,
if you
stop.
Do the Mets, you've solved some of the problems in baseball.
I promise you that you sending weird, explicit text messages to people who do not know you or like you is not going to work out in your favor.
No. Are you looking it up right now?
Yes, I need to do a PSA about this. He's the hitting coordinator whose
see how long it took you to find it?
Misconduct was first reported in 2018.
Yeah, oddly enough, Mets.
Let's stop this. His name's Ryan Ellis, I think. Yeah, Ryan Ellis quietly fired years after three women accused him of sexual harassment. Like, why do you think that it'll work? You know?
I can't. The only thing I can imagine about this, and we got to wrap it up pretty quickly here, but the only thing I can imagine about this is that it has.
No, you know what I think sometimes it is? I do think that might be part of it, but I think sometimes it's not necessarily about getting a response so much as it is the excitement of doing it.
Maybe. And that's an excellent point. I mean, and also it could be that it was greeted with the same disdain everywhere, but no one reported it. I mean, because that's really what has to happen is someone has to, like, not only report it, but successfully report it. And we know that the Mets were not super aggressive about weeding this culture out anyway. So, yeah, there you go. All right, Stacey. I am not on the show tomorrow, folks. So
are you
know,
be at Star
so
Rentals?
Now you know. I'm going to be all day. It's my all day
Star
mission
Rentals.
At Star Rentals. I am going to itemize all of the gear they have to rent. Yeah. And I'm going to bring you the entire list and read it aloud on Monday.
So okay, fellow
something
Starbies.
Really to look forward to. What do you call them again?
Starbies.
So you Starbies out there.
All you Starbies.
I'm going to give you the long laundry list of everything you can rent at Star Rentals. I'm not going to include the avocados because Stacey has already mentioned those. All right, Stacey, we'll see you on Monday.
Bye.
Rachel Bell coming up right after the break. Stay tuned.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. We are going to, Rachel and I here, are going to talk about a story here, and we are not trying to let you folks know that we are relaxing our personal hygiene in any way, but we still need to have a conversation about it, right,
yes,
Rachel?
Where we are still washing our hands. We may not be washing our armpits, is I guess what this story is. Yeah. This story is not COVID adjacent at all. It comes from something I've never heard of called Mel Magazine. And the name of this article is What Would Happen If You Never Showered With Soap? So they let these two guys take over the article. One of them's name is James Hamblin. He's a doctor. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic. And he wrote a book called Clean, The New Science of Skin. James stopped washing his body with soap 5 years ago and doesn't think that he'll go back. The other person is named Jack Gilbert. He is a microbial ecology professor in California, and he wrote a book called Dirt is Good, The Advantage of Germs for Your Child's Developing Immune System. So just to put it out there that these two experts, it's not just a hippie story. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting, just to kind of start this off, was the article explained why it is that you have BO, basically, which I never really knew before. So what it is this. So when your kidneys break down amino acids, which is protein, the byproduct or one of the byproducts is ammonia. So the two ways your body gets rid of the ammonia is either by peeing it out or sweating it out. And so when you sweat it out, there are these certain kind of microbes that like to feast on this ammonia. And basically, they're the ones that release the odor. So they're saying it's kind of like their byproduct in a way. So it's like these microbes are like pooping in your armpits, I guess. So that's basically why you smell. But these two guys argue that when you use soap, and I think a lot of people have heard this by now, mostly about antibacterial gel, that you're killing off the good bacteria. And what that can do to your skin, because you're killing also all this natural oil and moisture that keeps you hydrated. So they think that a lot of skin diseases, things like, you know, eczema, you know, psoriasis, all those things could be caused by overwashing or just which is to us normal amount of washing. So you're messing with your skin's pH. So basically, James Hamblin, the one who says he hasn't washed in 5 years, he starts by saying that A, his wife likes how he smells. B, when he was writing his book, he asked a lot of people if he stunk. And he said most people said that he didn't. And C, that instead of soap, you can still scrub yourself in the shower, like with a washcloth. And for your hair, instead of using shampoo, if you brush it, then it brings up the natural oils. I wanted to talk about this just because these kinds of stories intrigue me, because I think that America is obsessed with cleanliness. All we're trying to do all the time is keep all dirt out of our homes and off of our bodies, and everyone is obsessed with being the least amount of natural as possible. So a couple years ago, because of a podcast episode I did, I interviewed an Ayurvedic teacher, and Ayurveda is this ancient thousands years old Indian way of living. And she told me that I should stop washing with soap, only to wash under my arms and between my legs and my feet if they were dirty. And so for the past few years, I haven't washed my whole body with soap.
And what have you noticed?
And I'm totally fine. Because she said it was just so drying. And like, I do believe very heartily that there are parts of your body that do need to be washed.
Right.
You know, I really believe that. And whether that's destroying the microbes in those regions, so be it. I'm not going to stop washing those parts. But I don't need to wash my legs unless there's dirt on them if I go camping. I don't need to wash my arms. Nobody has a stinky arm.
Right.
I don't think.
Right. No. That's an excellent point. I mean, if what we're trying to do is get rid of the odor, then that's pretty location specific, right? I mean, it's not necessarily something that is everywhere. I think that there's some truth to this. I know that early on when they started producing antibacterial soap, my reflexive reaction was like, wait a minute. One, all soap is antibacterial to a degree. But two, like, at what point are we doing more harm than good by not allowing our bodies to develop any sort of natural symbiosis with all the stuff that's out there on the planet anyway? If all we're doing is essentially nuking every possible bit of bacteria that we're going to run into anyway, it seems like that's probably not a healthy way. It may sound counterintuitive, but it's not necessarily a healthy way to live.
Yeah, we're just learning in the last 10 years about, you know, microbes in general. And I think a lot of people now have heard about, you know, all of the flora and fauna in your gut and how that could actually affect depression and your weight and all of these different things. And it's the same on your skin. It's the same kind of microbes. So the thing that I take from this is just to question why you do things. I think that there's so many things we do in life and society just because we've been marching in that parade since we were born. But like, think about it before you do it. Like, why do I wash? Do I need to wash? Which to me kind of extends into a lot of environmentalism. Like, you know, do I need to use this bag at the grocery store to put my bananas that have a natural casing on them already in a plastic bag? Like, just question yourself why you do things. And I think there's this natural reaction to just, ew, everything in our society. And weren't you saying that on Twitter, there's like a big, big controversy about washing your legs?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You could see, like, there's arguments about whether or not you should or shouldn't wash your legs and do or don't wash your legs. And I think the conventionalist, I mean, I'll rinse off. I will, but I do a lot of cycling, so there's a lot of times that it just gets a lot of spattered from the road and dirt like that, and sure, I'm going to wash that off. But even then, sometimes it just needs a rinsing. It doesn't necessarily need to be scrubbed. I mean, it's not like I've been rolling around in oil. I mean, you know, at least not then. You know, it's more that I think that I think you're right. We do this over cleansing business, and I think we do it to our own detriment.
And in this article, they point out, which is no surprise, the whole concept of BO, like that, those two initials, were created by soap marketing. So there's a lot of that in our society where we're told things are the way they are. And they started with ads and marketing, but it was so long ago that nobody really remembers. And they also point out that, and you know, people are familiar with the concept of pheromones, like giving off chemical signals is a big part of being a human and interpersonal communication. And so if you're always scrubbing away your natural smell, and then on top of it, covering it up with deodorant and perfume and the smell of hair products and lotion, then it's kind of interesting. I wonder how we're relating to people different in the world than our ancestors were, who weren't covering up their scents or eliminating them.
No, I think that's true. And also, so that one guy who wrote about, you know, he decided to stop bathing and talked about that first first troubling month where definitely his body was not in balance and he was smelling pretty bad. But then his body sort of rounded a corner and its natural sort of ability to regulate. One of the people that I knew in my life like that, my dad, who showered regularly, I mean, it was like he was that guy, but he never used deodorant. And I don't recall one time the guy smelling bad. And he worked physical labor. I mean, it wasn't like he was working in an office. And my mom brought that. Mom and I talked about that once. And he's like, he never had used it, didn't use it. And consequently, his body never developed this sort of weird dependency on it, because it feels like sometimes that's what you're doing, is you're recalibrating your body to the chemical and not the other way around.
Exactly. Yeah. I dated someone who didn't use deodorant and it was the same. He never smelled bad. The thing I learned about deodorant too is, you know, if you wear a white shirt and you might get like the yellow pit stains, that's actually from deodorant. That's not from your body. So
yeah,
if
right.
you didn't wear deodorant, you wouldn't have those stains.
Well, there you go. Now I know. And when I don't shower this weekend and someone blames me, I'm just going to say, you go talk to Rachel about this.
Yeah, Rachel did it. Let's end this segment on me talking about armpit stains.
Let's do that.
That's how I like it.
All right, Rachel. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up, our final thoughts for the evening right after the break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. All right. Show is drawing to a close. Curtain is on its way down, but we have a few more things to shout at you before the show is done. Shane, what do you got?
I have the Mars rover on my mind a lot. Listening to you talk about it and kind of listen and learn about what's been going on, it made me think about when I was in the first grade and they had the last time that they had rovers go on Mars back in around 2003. It was the Spirit and Opportunity ones.
First grade, 2003. Just be quiet. That's it. You're done.
I'm sorry. You know what? I can't help it that I was born in the 90s. It's not what I would have chosen. I would have chosen where you
guys
were.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm just jealous. That's jealousy talking. That's nothing short of jealousy talking.
Yeah.
On my end.
But it's just, I don't know, it's really amazing to think about some of the things that are happening. Like, I've never been super into space, but just kind of listening to you and sitting back and thinking about it, it's like, this is like, what's it going to be like when I'm way older? What's it going to be like when I'm like an old man? Are we going to be on Mars? That's all the thoughts that's been running through my head.
That's where you're going to get a chance to see Jeff Bezos.
Maybe. My turn?
Yeah.
Sarah May, unless I'm mistaken, is sitting at SeaTac right now waiting to get on an airplane and head home back to college. We've had her for a week because of a COVID outbreak down in Florida. I had an experience today that I wanted to make sure I shared. She got up to an alert from American Airlines that said, your flight is canceled out of Dallas, because she was going to go Seattle, Dallas to Jacksonville. And, you know, in the old days, that would have been panic. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? I got on the computer to American Airlines website, and I had her on a different flight at no additional charge, because they had canceled the flight within 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
I mean, it really is. The idea that that big a thing, you can nudge here and nudge there online and boom, you've got it. That just blew my mind.
Well, and you're actually almost right about the old days. What would have happened is she would have ended up in Dallas and then found out.
Yeah.
That's what used to happen.
Yes.
Is you didn't find out until you got to the gate and like, oh, thanks, guys.
And then it would have been...
And then you're just scrambling around it at nighttime to try and find a flight where you need to go.
Exactly.
I remember those days.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, you're right. It's actually kind of remarkable you can do that. So from your phone.
Could have used my phone. I didn't. I used the desktop, but still, yeah.
So what I was thinking about today, obviously, is I still am thinking about the Mars rover. I loved watching the... I mainly get geeked out, and this is the same way I feel about sports and big events like that. I get geeked out on other people's joy. I get really excited when I see people who have worked incredibly hard on stuff freak out. And absolutely, like, that whole you know, tank of anxiety and worry and energy and effort, and watch that thing just completely blow up, you know, when they finally get that thing that they've been working so hard. Because like I said earlier in the show, this isn't just since the thing launched. For these people, like the professor over at the University of Washington who we had on yesterday, Tim Elam, these are a decade-long project. I mean, think about things that you would have worked on for a decade, and then it all comes down to 10 minutes of silence before you know if it actually... And even now, they don't know exactly how well it's going to work, but this first step, the miracle of being able to fly something all the way there, essentially autonomously, have it land and then send signals back, and we can actually start driving that thing around up there. I think it's amazing, but... I realize now that I really get happy when I watch other people ecstatic about something like that. That, to me, is like the purest joy in life. All right, folks, thank you very much again for joining us at Cairo Nights. I will not be on the show tomorrow. We'll be filling in Jack Stein on the show tomorrow. I am taking a day off to get other work done, hopefully, if I can get that work done. But I'll be back with you on Monday.
When you're in danger, take a look all around and dial